You're listening to Zen and the Art of Triathlon, your insider's guide into the world's toughest sport.
Okay, we're at La Jolla Cove, overlooking the cliffs.
We think this is more crazy. What were we missing out?
I biked from Kingston to Oshawa, which is 240K, the longest bike ride I've ever been on.
And I am in the midpoint of a 6-mile run through the woods.
This is Darren Siel, calling from Singapore. I'm leaving you an audio.
There's a big black dog standing in the road right in front of me.
My name is the Triborg 5000. I'm a genetically engineered super triathlete.
Tell me about your swim across the Tennessee River.
This is Brian, and I'm calling you from Annandale, Virginia.
I'm going to try to hit 50 miles per hour.
The swim was just unbelievable, man.
Brought to you in part by www.businessthoughtsblog.com. Find out more by visiting the blog at zentri.blogspot.com. Hey there, all you Tri Geeks. This is Brett, and I've got a co-host with me tonight, and his name is...
Chris. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, that's the same introduction I got out of Emily the other day. I was like, and your
well, name? I'm looking at you going, okay, keep going.
So we are in the mobile Zentri podcast studio, otherwise known as the Ford F-150, which is makes for a great recording sound. So we're actually in the campgrounds of Huntsville State Park tonight. We're getting ready for the Rocky Raccoon 100 tomorrow. Chris has been nice enough to give me an insider's view on how all the volunteering goes for such a race, and it's been really cool. So I want to thank Chris for all that he's done.
Yay!
Yay! We have an applause sound effect. I'll play it now. Chris is like, I don't see it.
Where is it? I don't hear it.
Anyway, so this is a 50-mile and 100-mile race, and it's also a national championship race. Big names here today.
Big names. Yeah. And we scored the United States Track and Field 100-mile trail championship this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So... hopefully it's going to be a good race. Got a good turnout.
Yeah. There was a lot of people here. I was surprised at the line. Is somebody going by the car looking at it?
With their headlight.
I don't think trail runners are used to this kind of situation with all our recording equipment and everything. You're just a little bit more laid back.
Well, the stuff is pretty fancy that you have.
You think?
Oh, man. It's big time.
My microphone at the end of a chopstick?
Yeah. That's some good stuff.
and the foam cover of that microphone held on with duct tape.
That's it.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, as trail runners, we like duct tape.
I know. So y'all can appreciate that. So I got a lot of interviews going on already, and the race hadn't even started yet. So just to give everybody a taste of what's going on, I'm going to go ahead and start off with Amanda McIntosh. And Chris and I will talk about her after we hear from her. So here she is.
Okay. All right, so I'm sitting here with Amanda McIntosh right after the pre-race meeting and just before the night before the race meal. So how's it going?
It's going great. Glad to be here.
And you're with Hammer Nutrition?
I am with Hammer Nutrition.
Okay, so you were saying something during the meeting about what's going to be out there on the race and medium chain carbohydrates and things like that. Can you say that again real quick?
We're going to have our energy drink called Heed, which is made with maltodextrin and meat. Okay, can you edit this?
Oh, yeah.
Maltodextrin-based, a medium branch carbohydrate, mm-hmm. which, unlike simple sugar, carries into the bloodstream a little bit slower and then keeps your blood sugar at a more even keel for a longer period of time. So you're not getting those spikes and crashes like you do with sugary products.
Okay. Actually, the show that I do is about triathlon specifically. Then I go out and cover other things like this. So for, let's say, a half Ironman to Ironman, would you recommend that kind of fuel?
Absolutely. A lot of triathletes use our product and have very good success with them.
Okay. Do y'all have anything new coming out or promoting something?
Well, our bars are coming out
Oh, yeah?
later this, it, well, in late January they should be ready. They should have been ready to ship, so they should be getting in stores in early February. Okay. And it's an all organic, cold processed bar, and we have a vegan variety as well.
Really? So wow. That's really cool. And Chris told me to ask you about this race in Argentina, I think.
Yes, December 11th, I traveled to Argentina with the U.S. Masters team for the World Championships, and actually, to my surprise and joy, I won the race. It was a 100-kilometer race around five lakes in the National Forest.
And you set the course record, too, right?
I did not. Actually, this is the first time the course has been run. So,
Then you did set the course record.
So maybe I did set the course record.
And what city was it near again?
The Masters record. It was in Bariloche, okay. Which is in Patagonia.
Okay.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. Great experience, huh?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, thanks for sitting here with me for a second.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett, and I'm sitting here with
Angela Weatherill.
And we are at the pre-race meeting for the Rocky Raccoon 100, and Angela is pointing out to me all the really important people that are here. There's one guy who's done how many races?
I can't imagine how many races Hans has done. Every 100-miler I've ever been at, and I've probably been at, 20 or so, he's always there. He always does these races.
And Angela recognized me because I was wearing a triathlon T-shirt from Lubbock Half Ironman, or Buffalo Springs Half Ironman, and she's wearing the finisher shirt from the exact same race. Yeah. So we're fellow triathletes here. So what's your role in this race?
I am the captain for the timekeeping. I've been the captain for the timekeeping at this race for the past 3 years for Joe, and previous to that, I ran the race.
Okay. And how well did you do in the race?
Oh, I just finished.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, I know. So Chris was saying that you're quite the timekeeper.
Yeah, I'm pretty anal about making sure that I get the people's times and that they're accurately recorded and that, that's important to the runner. If it's not important right away, it will be important later.
So they're running two different courses? How are we going to differentiate between the two different racers doing the 50 and the 100?
Their numbers will be different. Okay. They will be of different color and different numbering scheme.
Well, hey, thanks a lot. I'm going to go ahead and get ready for Joe. So, thanks. Okay, so Chris went and grabbed Amanda for me and brought her over to me and let her do that little exchange with me. And what do you know about Amanda?
Amanda's been trail running for quite a while. I don't know how long. She is a past winner of the Leadville 100 in Colorado.
Wow.
She's won the Bandera 100K. She's won races out here in Huntsville. Actually holds the course record for the 50-mile race.
Yeah.
Here in Huntsville. And she just competed in 100K World Championship, and I think it was in Argentina.
Yeah, she said so during the interview.
Yeah. And, and she won that one.
I asked her if she held the course record, and she said, well, it's a new course. And I said, well, that is the course record then, since you won.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really nice, very approachable, and just a very good runner.
Yeah, and she's a rep for Hammer.
She's a rep for Hammer Nutrition.
And I've actually used the Hammer Gel a lot. And they make the E-caps, right?
They make the Endurolites.
Endurolites, yeah.
Endurolites and the Sustain Energy and some of the other products. And I use some of those, when I'm biking or running.
Right.
And they work really well.
And let's see. Another guy that I talked to that was just a really funny guy was Mark Henderson.
Mark is a funny guy, and he's a very good runner.
All right, so I'm gonna play the audio from him, and here it goes.
Mark Henderson?
Yes, him. All right. From Clear Lake City, Texas.
All right, I'm standing here with Mark Henderson, and you have some stories about some long-distance runs.
Yeah, I've got a few stories. But right. Now,
I heard that you actually ran the MS-150.
Yeah, we ran from Houston to Austin, and it was actually really easy. I mean, we took it easy and stuff, and a couple of the guys that had just started running, we trained a lot together, and then they dropped out because one guy got tendonitis, one guy got acid reflux or whatever, and so he stopped at LaGrange, but we continued on and made it to Austin as a team and got the number across, and then we gave it to a girl in our work who has MS. I mean, she's afflicted with MS, and so we were able to present it to her, and it was a good, it was a really good time. So,
okay. And then also, did you run across Tennessee?
Most of it.
Yeah. What part?
Well, we started in Kentucky, and it's called the Vol State, the last annual Vol State. They keeps calling it the last annual, but it's definitely the last annual for me because I'll never do it again. it starts on the Missouri side of the Mississippi River. Uh-huh. You ride a barge across, and then you start in Kentucky, 13 miles through Kentucky, and then the northwest part of Kentucky, Tennessee, you start, and you meander southwesterly down underneath Nashville and then down towards Chattanooga up a mountain called Monteagle Mountain. It's 267 miles if you run the right course, which is a real challenge because the directions are really bizarre. And
it's kind of find your own way kind of run.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it's let's just say you get lost a lot. So the first 100 miles that I ran, I mean, I'd covered the first 100 miles correctly. And the first 100 miles, my crew, he had put 230 something miles on the vehicle trying to find the course, basically going back and forth and finding the course. So the thing about that course was it was run in the summer, so you have this standard heat and humidity, but also it was, you know, you're fighting Tennesseans. I mean, you're fighting Tennesseans the whole way, jacked up on Tennessee Joy juice and throwing stuff at you.
Any moonshine involved there?
Oh, man. I mean, they were all jacked up on everything, you know. So, but, and there's no shoulder. I mean, most of the course is no shoulder. So, but, you know, we finished, and it was, I think the record was 4 days and 20 something hours, or 4 days, 17 hours, and I did 3 days and 10 hours. So,
what's your role here tonight?
I'm just volunteering. Right now I'm training for the 100K team, the U.S. 100K team, see if I can't qualify, and I've got a couple qualifiers to try to make that. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, I'm just volunteering, cooking. I'm Sammy's kitchen bitch tonight.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow I'll be kitchen bitch in the morning, and then I'll run. I'll do some training myself, and then I'll pace the lead guys. It should be the lead guy.
Oh, you're a pacer.
I'll pace him, and then when we get done, hopefully I'll pace some more people so I can get some more miles on my feet, and that's always good, you know.
All right.
So, and then after that, then I'll do breakfast duty in the morning. So.
All right. Hey, nice talking to you.
Hey, you know
nice
what? I have a few questions for him. I know you've had some satisfaction of winning races, too.
All right.
Tell us how that compares with the satisfaction of, like, serving and volunteering.
Well, to me, it's just ethical behavior. It's incumbent upon all of us to give back to our sport, because if it's not for volunteers, I mean, these things don't happen. You know, you can have all the runners you want, but so I'm the president of two running clubs, a corporate running club, and then also a local running club down in the Clear Lake area, Clear Lake of Houston. But so I preach and teach, and then I live the example too. I mean, I volunteer, and last year I ran 15 races. 15 ultramarathons, and I volunteered at a lot of road races, but also the races that I ran, but also races that I didn't run. I volunteered here last year at the Rocky Raccoon, and then I ran, you know, a bunch of races. So it's just part of the game, you know. If you got to give back to the sport. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks, man.
You bet. Thank you, guys. Right.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you again.
Good seeing you too, right. Man. Take care.
Uh huh. Hey, thanks for that. Yeah. So there's a few people walking around in the kitchen tonight wearing cowboy hats. This is a very Texas race.
It is.
It's slightly Cajun, too, from what I get.
I think it's a good mix, actually.
Yeah.
Probably the one of the guys in the cowboy hats that you're talking about is Sam Voltaggio.
Yeah, yeah.
Or as we call him in the trail running community, Slammin' Sammy. And he is... Well, he got that name because in trail running, in ultra running, there's the Grand Slam, which is doing the four oldest ultras in the country,
mm-hmm.
which consists of the Western States 100 in California, then the Vermont 100, then they go to run Leadville 100, and
right.
they end up with the Wasatch 100.
Where's that?
Wasatch is in Utah.
Ooh.
Yeah,
oh yeah,
that's a tough one.
Yeah,
and if you complete all four, you've done the Grand Slam and
all four in 1 year.
All four in one summer.
In one summer.
Yeah, it's over, I think, a 3 month period.
Wow.
And it's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And these
yeah.
guys that do it are just awesome. Yeah. And Sammy did it a few years ago, but he didn't tell anybody he was going to do it. So he's kind of. He got the moniker of Slammin' Sammy, or even Silent Slammin' Sammy.
Yeah, well, that seems to be a trademark of a lot of these people here. Is no one talks about what they've done, really?
No.
It would almost be a faux pas to talk about.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Anything that you've done, but see, you could be telling somebody what you've done, and the person you're telling that to is done twice as much as you have. You're not going to impress anybody around here, really.
Exactly. I mean,
when the volunteers that are helping out the race are as accomplished or more accomplished than a lot of the.
a lot of the runners.
Exactly.
It's just amazing.
Well, that's one thing Joe Persaitis does. He's the race director of this race and also the Bandera 100K. He gets people to head up his aid stations that are ultra veterans. I mean, these guys run 100 milers.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing. So, and, you know, most of the volunteers are ultra runners.
Well, just so that everybody knows, of course, this is an audio podcast, but we're going to produce a video podcast out of this. It'll take a little bit longer to get out there because Professor Erich has to go through and take all the video and make a nice production out of it. But in the end, you're going to see a whole lot of stuff. Chris took a lot of video over the past couple days. You've been here. It's Saturday night.
No, it's Friday night.
And you've been here since Thursday.
I got here Thursday morning around 8. Yeah.
So you took a lot of video of just some random things.
It's just random.
But it really shows what goes on behind the scenes. And then the race officials here or the staff or whatever were kind enough to let me just kind of wander around with a video camera and videotape things that were going on and with a microphone and get some more of this, you know, once, because I didn't get here until tonight. And so I got here just minutes before the pre-race meeting where he went over the course. They went over the course. And some big names kind of showed up. And I got a video interview with Jorge Pachinko.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And he was last year's race winner.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was.
And he enters the room, and everybody just kind of looks, you know. No one makes a big deal about it,
no.
but it's obvious that he's somebody important, you know.
Well, what's funny is I think right before you interviewed him, I was sitting and was standing close to him and listening to them talk about some stuff. Him and his I think it's his wife or his handler,
mm-hmm.
and
or both.
Yeah, I'm not for sure. And he was trying to find Mark Henderson to pace him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Mark is a guy that could actually come and run this race and possibly win it, but yet he's going to pace or, you know, might pace Jorge to help him out.
Yeah.
But yet Mark's working in the kitchen, you know, so he's doing kitchen duty and it's going to come out and pace. And
Mark said that. He said that he was going to go out and pace somebody.
Yeah. So that's who he's going to pace, plus he's doing kitchen duty.
Yeah.
So that's the mindset of the ultra guys.
Yeah, it's a very strange world out here in these woods.
Oh, it is.
So Huntsville, where this race is very slightly rolling terrain, very slightly, but it's thick, thick pine woods. It's mm-hmm. very beautiful. The weather tonight is probably in the 40s, and it's probably going to be 40 degrees when they start at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
At least, yeah.
And I'm going to try to videotape that and also get some audio of that as well. And I had some other business I wanted to talk about. Oh, well, I've got another interview with Lee, who is just a guy that was volunteering. A guy I was talking to while I was watching everybody else eat all this awesome food. He and I just kind of were standing off to the side, and we started talking, and this is what we talked about. Okay, so I'm sitting here with...
My name is Lee Whitlock.
And Lee and I are watching everybody eat all this great food while we just kind of... Stand here hungry, I think.
Yeah, the culinary, they put a lot of work into their trail run food. That's one of their novelties. They're good at that.
So you were telling me about that you just did Bandera as a volunteer for your first time ever?
Yes, sir. I've done a few road races, a few road marathons, and a few trail runs, too, and ultras. But my volunteering at Bandera is my first time.
Yeah. And so what'd you think of it?
Well, I was so into it that I decided to come and do it this week with some friends of mine. My friends at the church, they kind of get me into this running thing, but the volunteering is a different aspect where we get to serve other people, and I'm kind of into that service and citizenship and just giving back.
Yeah. So what were some of the dramatic differences? Did you get tired doing being a volunteer?
You know what? There's a lot of life, in, especially late at night, because there's music and there's a lot of just a lot of festivities, I guess, at the aid stations, and so a lot of humor. And we didn't really get tired because every time we heard runner coming in, we got on a new high. And so I wouldn't say we got tired at all.
So towards the end of the race, how are they? How far apart are the runners?
You know what? Sometimes we wouldn't see them for an hour.
Oh my God!
45 minutes. Of course, they're in late wee hours of the night. You might not see anybody for an hour, but you just know that they're out there still because every aid station is logging the runners as they come in. And the ham radio operators are letting you know who's coming up and who's on the course still and who's had to fall out of the race. I guess it's really not a race, but the event.
Yeah.
And they let you know who's not going to be able to finish. And but yeah, you just wait with the expectation to serve people. And when they come in, just to open their bottles and to just cater to everything they need. That's the art of service, and it's very rewarding. It was for me. That's why I'm here this weekend.
So, after your experience at the last race, what are you thinking you might do different this time?
Well, I don't really know. I don't know how they'll use me. It's one of those things that I've just come up, and there's plenty of places for someone who likes to cook and clean. There's a job for you if you just like to fill water bottles. If you're just an affirmer or an encourager, and there's a place for you on trail runs, and it's totally different than the marathon scene.
Yeah. Well, do you see when these people coming through, trying so hard and everything, and when you're out exercising yourself later on, like on a run, do you think about these people and their faces and stuff?
Well, I know that in some aspect I've been there. I've been too tired to take a chip off my lace, or I've been too tired to bend down and buckle my shoelaces, and it gives you a chance to do it for people. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really different, because I'm a heavy guy, and I'm a Clydesdale, and so I know what it's like to be tired, and then to have someone fill up a bottle, or to give you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that they've just made, or to peel an orange for you, and to have someone do it for you, it's rewarding and satisfying. Yeah, a lot of satisfaction out of volunteering.
So when they're coming into the aid station, do you have a sense of what they need even before they even get to the point where you can help them?
Yeah, most of them can articulate exactly what they need as they're running up. You don't want to leave them there and let them socialize too much at these aid stations. You want to try to get them their needs and get them on their way. And so we'll just typically ask them, hey, what can we get for you? What can we get for you? And usually it's some sort of nutritious type energy. The aid stations are fun because there's just a lot of food there.
So what's something that people, like, what's the most common thing early on, and the most common thing about halfway, and then the most common thing at the end?
Yeah, I can tell you that for, like, early in the morning, they'll just be hitting the fluids pretty hard, and maybe in the afternoons, maybe some salts. Some people really like the salties, the nuts, the mixed nuts, perhaps potato chips or Pringles. But then later, you need some sort of energy, and that might come in the form of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Or it may come in a cup of soup, broth. Late at night, that chicken broth, and you're an Ironman, I guess, you know that chicken broth, it tastes like surf and turf if you eat that late at night. And so even some brisket.
The broth that I had on my first Ironman at about halfway through the run was about the best thing I think I've ever tasted in my life.
Isn't that unbelievable that just a ramen noodle broth can taste so nice, and it's so good for those runners to have that, especially when it's cool at night.
Yeah.
But there's something about that broth that really tastes good to them late at night. But anything from Oreos to gummy bears.
They serve Oreos?
Mm-hmm, yeah, Oreos and saltine crackers and a lot of candies, a lot of M&Ms, Skittles type candies.
My friend Chris was telling me that this is kind of like a big moving party of food, actually.
Yeah, you know what? That's why I kind of like running them myself. But I found that when you volunteer, you can eat all day long and not even be hungry.
Yeah.
You just eat all day long and just kind of graze on what they have. But, yeah, you can grab a sandwich. But late at night, the good stuff comes out. And the sometimes the brisket or the chili or the soup and the gumbo. They had the gumbo at Bandera, which is really tasty.
So who are you here to support?
You know what? Stuart Skeeter's running his first 100-mile race this weekend. He's kind of worked up to it, and so the other guys are working on Boston. But he's decided to put all of his energy into this as a goal of his. And so I look forward to him finishing maybe around 7 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Okay. It's Stuart, right?
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll look for his results at the end and see how well he did.
Yep, Stuart Skeeter. He'll finish.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Chris, he was a guy that I think I told you earlier, he'd only volunteered once before, and it was at Bandera.
Right.
And he found it just to be really amazing. So he was out here again to do the
same
sort of thing. So I got in a few questions of what's it like, you know, racing versus volunteering. Well,
good.
I keep calling it a race, and it is not really a race. It's a race for some people, but for so many others, isn't it just an event?
Right. When you start talking, you know, the longer distance stuff, say 50 miles, 100 miles, it's, you know, for some, you're right, it is a race. You know, Jorge's going to go out and race this thing, and, you know, he's looking at coming in 14 hours.
Right.
And but for most, it's just to come out and finish.
Yeah.
That's all it's about. This race has a 30-hour cutoff for the 100-mile and 29 for the 50-mile.
Yeah.
So you could theoretically walk the 50-mile and still come in within the time limit. But for most, it's just to come out and finish.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's just doing what you can do. It's not about your competitors. It's about you.
Right.
And the course. And that's what's, I think, is special.
Yeah. So just to kind of switch topics a little bit, I've got some Zen and Yard of Triathlon business to take care of real quick. The guy that I've been talking about that was on Postal cycling team a couple years ago, it was Floyd Landis. I could not remember his name, and I proposed him as a possible winner of the next Tour de France.
Interesting.
And also, well, everybody's saying Ivan Basso.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, people on my show, they're like emailing me.
Yeah.
And Levi Leipheimer, and I'm trying to remember some other big names. So I'm starting this thing on the show where I'm trying to get people to email in and tell me, or comment on the blog.
Right.
And tell me who they think's going to win, see if we can get some sort of consensus going. And
well, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, really, and I mistakenly said that it starts in London when that's, and people kind of laugh about that, yeah, and but actually it does start in London, but not this year. It's 2007.
Right.
I think it may actually be starting in Germany this year.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Because I think it was somebody we know told me that their girlfriend was in Europe in that country, and it's not France, and it's not London, looking at the starting line. That they've already got it all set up, and he's like, "It's not London." So I googled it, and it was, it's 2007's London. So, and Chris is actually wearing a new headset that I went and bought.
Yay.
It's a LabTech, and that, and using the mixer that my dad and I built together with soldering iron and wiring, he and I are able to talk at once and do this co-host thing, which is cool, man.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. I've never done anything like this, and it feels like I'm up in the booth of the NFL. And
yeah, we're looking. It's like we're looking down over the stadium, but there's no lights.
The only thing we see are tents.
Yeah, it's we're smack dab in the middle of a campground, and it's night. I mean, it's pitch black outside except for the lights of the lodge and stuff like that. And this show will actually be located physically on a Google Map hack that I have. On the blog, you can look up on the right-hand side, find shows on Google Maps, and not the Frapper map, but there's a Google map that I made that some shows are posted on if they're like geographically like a different place than where I usually am. So like the shows from Tennessee and San Diego and some other places, or interviews that I've done with people that are from far, far away, I've put those locations on the Google map. So what you can do with this show, for example, is open up the map, and it's also located at maps.blankner.com. And you can go there and open up the Google map and look on the map of the United States or wherever and pick shows by geographic location. So this show is going to be in East Texas and just north of Houston. And you've already heard the show, so you're already there listening to it. But you can go to the map and look for the marker and turn on the satellite, the hybrid, and kind of get an idea of what the course actually looks
like.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, but it's in the state park, Sam Houston State Park, and I'll put the dot right there.
Huntsville State Park.
Oh, yeah, I keep saying that.
And well, you have the Sam Houston National Forest right next door.
Yeah, Sam Houston National Forest, and then there's a huge statue of Sam Houston right next to the freeway. So the race starts at 6 a.m.
6 a.m. for the 100-mile.
You're getting up when, and what are you going to do?
We're supposed to meet at the start line at 5:45. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we're going to start hanging glow sticks for about the first 4 or 5 miles of the race or so.
Right.
Since the race is at 6, starts at 6, it's going to be dark.
Yeah.
And
sunrise is at like 6:30 at least, though, right?
It's closer to 7, I think.
Oh, okay.
You know, of course, you remember you're in the woods.
Yeah, you can't see anything.
So there's going to be a few of us up early, and we're going to be hanging glow sticks for the 100-mile runners to a certain point. And, of course, they'll have to start with flashlights. And then
are the 100-mile runners starting first?
Yeah, they're starting at 6.
Okay. And what time are the 50s?
They start at 7.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought everybody started at the same time.
No, it just it allows them to spread out a little more that way. And after that, you know, it's kind of a roll of the dice what's going to happen.
How is everybody staying in touch with each other? Cell phones or radios?
Most of the time it's cell phone. Radios don't work in this park.
Why?
You have
The
woods are too thick. You have to be in certain areas for the radios to work. And even cell phones sometimes is just is iffy.
Yeah.
Depending on where you're at in the park.
But boy, man, they've got to help out a lot, cell phones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've
I'm interested in tomorrow. There's two things I'm going to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. At some point, I'm going to try to find some free time and go for a run.
Okay.
And just so the audience knows, Chris told me that that's okay. I can go run on the course, you know.
It's a public park, and it's open.
And everybody's really spread out, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is we're guessing that the first guy, maybe Jorge even, will come in. Around what time?
We're guessing if it all goes as predicted, probably around 8 p.m. tomorrow night.
Okay. 8 p.m. So I definitely need to be at the finish line well before that. Now, will they be calling in or radioing in that he's coming in?
No.
We'll have no idea?
No.
Unless
you talk to one of the aid station people, you know, and that's possible. You know, someone from the aid station might give us a call.
Okay. So where's the where's he going to be coming running down?
Right next to your truck.
That power line right away right here?
Yes, right where you're parked.
Right next to us?
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
Well, not right now, but some
point
tomorrow.
Is that him right there?
Yeah, that could be him. Well, look.
There he goes. He's got an early start.
Oh, he's just warming up.
Yeah. Okay, so I just need to be sitting around with the microphone ready.
Yeah, and we'll be able to tell by his previous loops about when he's going to finish.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you just kind of take a look at his.
But the
his
last,
times.
The next to last aid station isn't going to call in and say that he's on his way.
Probably not.
Really?
They might. I mean, it's you know, it's a roll of the dice. It's possible.
Yeah.
This is not a big production. I mean, he comes across the finish line. It's like, yay, okay, you finished. Move on.
Yeah, and what's the prize for winning? Nothing.
Nothing.
There's no cash prize. That's what I mean.
Well, what he'll
there's
get,
a lot, and you know,
no,
winning,
yeah,
but,
there's no cash prize.
But no cash prize.
You know, you'll get you a finisher shirt, and you, if you complete the 100, you get a belt buckle.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Most hundreds, and I would say all hundreds, when you complete the race.
I knew some did it, but I didn't know this one.
Yeah, all of them do it, and if it's within the time limit, you get a belt buckle.
Wow.
And that's, and I mean, you're talking from.
So what's the time limit for the 100?
It's 30 hours.
30 hours.
Yeah. Very doable. That, very, very, very doable.
That's a long time to be running.
That's a long time. But then think about how fast he's going to run. That's very, very fast for 100
miles.
That's
what the Kenyans say.
It's like an 820
run faster mile. And it's over quicker.
The pain doesn't last as long.
Yeah. How do you run so fast? Easy. I'm done quicker.
But still think about it. Covering 100 miles at about an 820 pace.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. Wow. 820.
Yeah.
I'm good to be doing 3 miles at that pace.
I know it.
All right, so I guess I'll catch up with you tomorrow, and we'll say goodnight to the audience tonight.
Goodnight, audience.
Magically fast forward through time to tomorrow morning, and hopefully I'll get up in time.
I will make sure that I will.
Hey,
come
by
your truck.
Come by and bang on the window,
at 4:30 in the morning.
Okay. And then, is there any food or anything? Everybody cooks their own for breakfast. I know there's food for some people.
They'll have breakfast. I don't know how they're going to do it tomorrow morning, but if you have something, I would go ahead and get something first thing, because I plan on eating something first when I get up.
Yeah. Well, I was going to make myself some tea in the morning with the little stove and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to just eat some cereal and some coffee. So.
You know, it was really interesting. The Jorge was saying, I asked him, you know, what he's going to eat tonight.
Uh-huh.
And he,
right.
you know, not much. Just a little bit of pasta and some bread.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow morning he said he's gonna have a little bit of bread and coffee. I think he said coffee. It was hard to hear him a little bit, and he's got an accent, so it was kind of hard to.
And
make
he's
out
a quiet
his
guy.
Yeah, he's very unassuming.
Yeah.
So I just find that very interesting that so many of the really top athletes don't eat; they just eat normally.
Yeah. Oh.
And they don't want a lot in their gut. You know, they'll eat while they're racing.
You have to. Yeah.
But
not. You have to.
But not just have a huge ton of food in their sitting in their gut before they get going.
Well, you really don't need it. I mean, this type of race is so different, and you really have to be on top of your nutrition. And, you know, you don't need to stuff yourself before.
Yeah.
You know,
but I did see a lot of people doing that, though.
Well, Well, you know, it is food. It's good food. You're going to eat.
It was good, man. It was really good.
Yeah, Sammy is an awesome chef. Yeah. The guy is good.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you in the morning.
Okay.
Out.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's the day of the race. The 100 milers have already left, and I caught that on video. And also, waiting for the 50 milers to go out, I did a short interview with Alex. He is a runner from Austin, and he was getting ready for the race. So here's our interview. All right, so I'm sitting here with Alex, getting ready for the 50 miler. How are you feeling?
I feel real good. Thank you very much.
And Alex is an old friend from the Runtex forums out of Austin. And so do you have any goal time or anything like that for this?
Well, I've got a Super Bowl party to be to tomorrow night at about 5, so I'd like to be done by 5.
Yeah, we'll try to make it by then. So who are you here with?
I'm here by myself, actually, and just came up to meet my friends from that came in from Louisiana, Dwayne Lewis and his wife, and Steve Hooksman, his friend, and we all came together, and they're doing the 100 miler.
Okay. All right, man. Well, good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
It's easy. Hey, thanks, Alex. That was really cool, man. Alex is a really great guy. So it's really cold and foggy this morning, and it was really neat watching these runners take off into the night. No real rush at all. In fact, I think they sounded the gun or whatever instrument they used to send everybody off, and they started the race, and everybody just kind of wandered off into the woods.
They're going right, right?
So they were following the night sticks, the glow sticks that people put out. And they're gone. They're out. So next I'm going to go over and try to catch the 50-miler start on video. And I'll check with you in a little bit. It's Saturday morning, and it's 7:44. Both groups of racers have left. The 100 milers left at 6 a.m., and then the 50 milers left at 7. And it is freezing cold outside. It's probably in the 40s, and very foggy. And I'm walking down the trail right now, which is going to be the return route on many of the laps and also the finish. So there's orange cones and flagging and all that, but I'm all by myself, and a rabbit just ran by. Big, big jackrabbit. So this morning I actually got a chance to talk to a lot of people and see how the support crew helps out at the race start. So let's hope that they're warmer than I am out there running. It is pretty cold. Of course, I camped overnight in my truck, and along with a lot of other support crew that was camping here. And what's interesting is I was trying to videotape and do some audio recordings and completely stay out of the way. But as the more inconspicuous that I tried to make myself seem, probably the more conspicuous I was, is that guy that was walking around with the video camera, just trying to keep quiet to himself, makes you kind of stand out a little bit. So this morning I was wearing a red beanie and a gray jacket with black shoulder stripes and stuff. So if you remember seeing me there, how's it going? So, yeah, the race seems to be going along very fine. I got a chance to talk to Joe and videotape him for an interview. He's very busy right now, but apparently it's going to get a lot busier. And I'm looking forward to seeing the first people come through. It's going to be pretty soon now. People like Jorge Pachenko may come through here in just a few minutes. I'm going to try to get things done and videotape him. So since I was camping in my car overnight, I've gone back and had some Fig Newmans and brushed my teeth, gotten all ready, and waiting for it to warm up and get a break so that I can go for a run, man. All these people running really makes me want to go out for a quick run myself. And it is really amazing getting into the kitchen and seeing the head chef and all of his support crew cook up these great meals, including hand-rolled breakfast burritos, all kinds of scrambled eggs, coffee, everything for everybody to have along the trail. And to also watch this support crew, which is just amazing. They apparently do a lot of races together, so they're a very fine-tuned machine, and everybody knows each other's role, and everybody's asking, you know, how can they help? So it's very easy, if you need something done, just to turn around and ask somebody who's just standing right there, another volunteer to help you out. So, and like I said, the first runner is going to be coming through here pretty quickly to hit this aid station again at the end of his first lap, and I need to videotape that and maybe get some audio of that too. And then I'm going to be here all day until the first runner finishes, and I'll probably get the first few runners coming in, and that'll be the show audio wise. So stay tuned. All right, so I'm standing here with, I suppose, is the trail doctor. He's got a whole registered nurse. All right, my wife is an LVN, and he's got a table set up with all kinds of healthcare products for the runners when they come by at this aid station, and I'm going to ask him a little bit about what he's got going on. So what's your name?
Michael McGilberry. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for 21 years. I've been running 17 years. I've been doing this about 10 years now, working as a medic. Primarily, it's been a learn-as-you-go kind of experience. There hasn't been a whole lot of people out here. Most of the stuff that I picked up from working these things over the years. The first year I came out here with a blood pressure cuff, a stethoscope, and a light. And now I come out here with two bags full of all kind of gear and stuff. The most amazing thing has been duct tape. Being a nurse and a runner, I never considered duct tape at all useful except for fixing things at the house or holding the bike together.
Yeah, well, I heard you talking about that earlier, and you were saying to leave it on. You cover up a blister with it or a raw spot, and then you leave it on until it comes off on its own?
Yeah, that's the best way. That way you keep the skin intact up underneath it. If you pull the duct tape off after the run, the skin's still soft. It gets loose from where the blister is, and sometimes it's still fluid-filled. And when you pull the duct tape, you pull the loose skin off with it, exposing that area. Right. And depending on how bad the blister is, it could be just a little spot, or it could be basically the whole bottom of the foot. So it's typically better to leave it on till it falls off.
So you see people with blisters along the whole underside of the foot?
I have, yeah.
So what's the most common thing that you see out here? On what part of the foot?
Mostly around the arch, kind of the back part of the arch. Sometimes up around the ankle, around the back part of the ankle. Almost always at the ball of the foot where the bunion growth typically is. That's the primary points. if you run long enough, you're going to get a blister. That's just pretty much all there is to it. The best things you can do are preventative. Number one, use some kind of substance on your foot. Body Glide is one that comes to mind, but any product will do. I don't get paid by Body Glide.
I use lots of Body Glide myself, but I've never thought of using it on my feet, actually.
All over the bottom of your feet before you put your socks on. The other thing you can do is keep your socks changed. Try to keep your socks as dry as possible. I know it slows people down, but if you can change your socks each loop, or at least that'll kind of help keep your feet drier, which is going to reduce the likelihood of blistering.
I've also heard of the idea of bringing extra pairs of shoes that if you're doing like a really hot, long run, your feet swell.
Yeah, that's very true. And the thing, again, another preventative measurement is to always make sure when you get your shoes fit, you get a thumb's width between the end of your toe and the end of the shoe. You got to remember, you're not buying your shoe for the beginning of the run because nobody's feet hurt at the beginning of the run.
Right.
Everybody's feet hurt at the end, so you want to get the fit at the end of the run and not at the beginning of the run. Chains of socks, chains of shoes, keeping the feet as dry as possible. Once you do start getting a blister, treat it as fast as you can. And duct tape for these guys, especially in an area like this where it does stay damp, is probably one of the best deals.
So let's go over what you got here. I see Pepto-Bismol, aspirin, Vaseline.
Body Glide. Forget the newspaper.
No, yeah. Don't run and read the newspaper at the same time.
We have some Benadryl spray. I have for itches and scratches, hydrogen peroxide, alcohol wipes, Curlex, Ace Wraps, peppermints for low blood sugars, Tums for upset stomachs.
My wife's a type 1 diabetic. Do you ask anybody, like, ahead, as they come in and they look really, really bad, are you diabetic or anything like that? Because sometimes they forget to say.
Well, I like to talk to them when they come by if I can, because it kind of gives you an idea of where their baseline is to begin with, because it's easy. One year I had somebody call and say that they had a confused runner.
Yeah.
And he was running back and forth between two areas, and they were afraid he was hypoglycemic and hypothermic. Well, the guy just had bad sense of direction is what it was on. And as soon as I
saw
him...
Can't really treat that.
No, I can't really treat that. And it was dark. And as soon as he came up and I heard him talking, he was very lucid and was fine. So you kind of, if you can talk to him and see him when they come through, you can kind of pick up on things as the race goes on.
Okay.
But, yeah, I usually try to ask them. And I just keep the stuff out in case they need something. They usually tell me what they need.
Now, do you ever have to treat anybody that was running and fell down, like tripped on a root, and they've broken their collarbone or arm and they're going to keep on running or anything like that?
I had one fractured ankle, and we weren't sure it was fractured when he first came in. He twisted it on a root. I encouraged him to go to the doctor and get it checked out. He had already ran 60 miles and really wanted to finish his first 100-miler. So despite nursing and family suggestions, he attempted to go another loop. And
they amputated.
They ATV'd him back after the first aid station, and then he went to the emergency room, and it was fractured. You really can't tell them what to do. You can kind of make suggestions, but you can't really tell them. Most of these guys have been doing this a long time. They know when they're in trouble. They'll tell you instead of you telling them. But that's been the worst I've ever seen out here.
Oh, okay, great. So do you have any really odd medicines or advice? Something very eclectic, unique. I heard you talking about using this polish remover to help get the duct tape off.
Yeah, I try to get people to leave the duct tape on, but there was a woman one year that wanted it off, and that was probably the worst blister I'd ever seen, and it just about came off her skin almost came off the whole bottom of her foot when we were taking the duct tape off, and she wanted to fly back to Chicago with her sandals on, and I think she probably flew back to Chicago with just her socks on.
Yeah.
That's probably been the most bizarre. But it's, I mean, each one's so different, and everybody responds so different. There's usually something interesting at each one.
Okay, here comes the first runner. After about 20 miles, 2.5 hours, current race leader. It's Jorge. Wow, that was fast. And there he goes, off into the woods. Wow, man. It's like he just appeared out of the woods like a Yeti and just disappeared again. Golly. I barely had time to turn anything on. So the next person could be 1 minute behind or 20 minutes behind. Who's it? Who are you saying? Andy who?
Andy Jones Wilkins.
Andy Jones Wilkins?
He was here last year, second, didn't he?
Was he second last year?
Okay. Of course, Paul Frost from San Antonio is here.
Paul Frost.
All right, guys. All right, Paul.
All right. Here's the next two.
All right, Paul. On the right.
Paul's on the right. Yeah, 2 and 3. Well, 3's still in there somewhere, I think. So number 2 and number 3 came in just a few minutes after Jorge.
That was Jorge.
Is he still in there? It's number four. Looking good. Number 262. Around the cone. Right back out again. Looks like he's got his wife or girlfriend's helping him out. Special mixture of something for him. Little words of advice. He's walking a little bit. Is he gone? Is that guy gone? Number three? No. Two came in, and only one left that I saw. And then number four came in and turned around right here and then took off. So it seems that another runner, the third place guy, just went right into the lodge, into the restrooms. The medical guy says that he's probably doing number two. Number three is doing a number two. So hopefully he's all right. Here he comes. Looking good. Clear the course. All right, so we're 3 hours and 3 minutes into the race. Probably a grand total of 10 or 15 people have already come in to the first aid station. And they're looking good. Nobody having really any serious problems so far. And I'm actually walking along the race course, on the course, back to the car, where I'm going to probably change some clothes and get geared up for the rest of the day, drinking a nice cup of coffee and watching everybody else exercise. Just been hanging out at the lodge, which is the main aid station, and talking with people, and it's just been really great. Had a good conversation with the first aid guy, who is an RN, so you can see that this is obviously a well-run course, and that type of position, the first aid person, is very important. And here comes number 26. Looking good, man. Looking good. So who are you waiting for? Your husband? What number is he? 201?
20-something.
20-something. You should recognize him, I guess. Yeah. No, I do triathlons. Yeah. But this is a lot longer than... And not to say that triathlon's any better or any worse. This is just totally different. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know if I could run 50 miles nonstop. Or 100. Well, what they do is they make this a lot of fun, though, with all the food and yeah, and the really good support. And the time limit's so long, you can really enjoy it if you wanted to. Yeah. You don't have to kill yourself over it. So. You can run a lot farther on trails, yeah. All right, so I'm in my truck again. I'm parked right next to part of the run course, and the runners are really coming in. They're coming and going right now. In mass, coming by the main lodge as an aid station and then leaving all over again. Most of them look really good. For a lot of them, this is just the first 20 miles, so everything's going great. I see a lot of people with a whole lot of different setups, see a lot of Under Armour and related types of equipment, and also lots of liquids, lots of fuel belts, all kinds of good stuff. Lots of conversations with people that are interested in what's going on, support crews and husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends and kids and parents helping out, and people talking about how great a course this is because it's off-road. You're able to run quite a distance farther than you would if you were on pavement like at a marathon. So there's a guy, for example, Camelback, boonie hat, That's you know, odd equipment that you wouldn't normally see in a regular run, but this is really out in the woods and quite a distance, so people gear up differently. So I'm actually back here downloading audio off my MP3 player here in a second to clear up more space. And a lot of people might be checking out this show from a roundabout way, maybe through the Tejas Trails website, and they don't know where to find more shows. And they don't know where to find more shows like this about running and triathlon or whatnot. And don't forget, you can always go find more of this kind of stuff at zentri.blogspot.com, or you can go to iTunes or podcastalley.com and type in triathlon or running, and you'll find this show and many, many others. This one's called Zen and the Art of Triathlon. So that was a little promo for our own show here, and I'm going to stop recording and be back in just a little bit. Oh, and by the way, on the topic of race nutrition, I was talking to a really great lady that's a supporter out here for her husband, and we were talking about the differences between Gatorade and Propel Fitness Water. And while I use a lot of Gatorade, and I have used Propel before, and it's great, she was talking about why she uses Propel more than Gatorade, and it was interesting. She said that it's less sweet and I guess just less filling, and just lighter, and she likes it better. So that's your Propel promotion right there. And actually, I'm looking out the window of my truck, and I see Chris. Chris is sitting for the first time ever eating a donut? What is he eating? Some sort of bagel. I don't think I've ever seen him sit down at a race. Hold on, I'm going to harass him. What are you doing, Chris? You're just sitting there. I've never seen you do that before. You got enough water? The whole gallon jug? Gotta keep hydrating. Alright, man. Yeah, he's just sitting in a lawn chair, just watching people run by. Okay, that's it for now. I'll be back later. Alright, it is 5:54, and I just got back from the back 40. With Chris, we went out on an ATV to bring the last out and back aid station, a whole bunch of pizza and all kinds of other food, Cokes, lots of stuff, and then the haul trash back in. It was a very, very long ride by ATV, and I got a really good look at the trail. And it's very gentle rolling hills, soft ground, real nice, actually. Very, very nice conditions if it's dry. And then some roots, actually a lot of roots, and we actually saw one guy wipe out, but he recovered, but it looked like it took a toll on him. And the race leader, and most likely the winner, Jorge, was out in front of us for a good while, and we were clocking him with the ATV, and the guy is running probably about 10 miles an hour. He's really moving. He might set the course record. It's really exciting, actually, watching a guy like that run. And actually, I told Chris that I felt kind of like the cameraman at the Tour de France, where they lean out the cars and take pictures of the riders as they go by, because we went right past him real slow and took some video of him and so forth. So after he finishes, I'm going to hang around just a little bit and then leave, because I got to get back to the house. And I'm not going to be here for the overnight finishing of everybody, where they're running by candlesticks all over again. Actually, here comes the guy that fell down. Yeah, there he goes. He's looking good, man. Everybody's looking really good. Very few people have cracked. There's one guy that I saw at the lodge aid station that didn't look so hot. But in general, the time limit for you to do one of these things is so long, and the ground is so good for running on, that really you could walk the whole thing and have a really nice time. And everybody's so friendly that it makes for a really good adventure, actually. It's just a great way, apparently, to spend the weekend. You could come out here and do the 50-miler and take all day and finish, you know, with daylight left. A lot of guys have. So I'm going to wrap things up here and go back to the finish line, where I'll be able to videotape Jorge coming across, and maybe the second place guy, and maybe the first place female. Who knows? So this has been a really great adventure, and I'll get back on the mic here after the finish. All right, I'm standing here with somebody that hardly anybody ever talks to at the race. They always pass him by. It's the photographer. How's it going?
It's going very well.
And who do you shoot for?
I shoot for Endurance. Well, actually, the name of the company has changed. EnduroPhoto.
Okay.
.com.
Okay. So what are some great things you've seen so far today?
Well, one of them just passed, this guy Marty. He's just been an inspiration to me all day. Every time we've had this like mini conversation every time, you know, he passes me, which has been about six times. I do that with a lot of people though, you know, we talk and gab, and especially the ladies, you know, they seem to be more talkative.
They always are. Yeah. So, how do you find the best places to take photos from?
Well, I shot this event 2 years ago. The best place back then was on the bridges in the morning. They just seemed to have the nice little, you know, the fog on the water and stuff. This year it's been a lot different because the weather has been more sunny, and I've been more back in the woods on the trails where there's a little uphill grade, you know, and there's a lot of shadows from the branches. It seemed to have a good effect. I'll find out when I see the computer when I get home.
Okay. And what kind of camera are you using?
I use a Canon 1D. It's a pro camera for sport shooters.
Okay, and you probably got to get this guy's photo coming in right here, I guess. So do you like spending your weekends doing this?
Well, you know, I'm an account executive for Apple Computer, and some, you know, by most people's definition, I probably get paid a whole lot of money. So I've got to love what I do. I mean, this is not really a for money thing. I mean, I get to buy nice cameras and
play with them.
And play with them, and I do, you know, make some money. But I meet a lot of fun people like yourself. And I mean, I meet 10 or 20 fun people every time I shoot a race like this, especially the ultra events.
Did you shoot Bernie last year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw you out on the course. I remember your car.
I've shot Bernie probably outside of Austin, Texas. I probably shot Bernie more races there than any other thing. They've had triathlons, they've had bike things, they've had a bunch of triathlons. You know, kids triathlons, you know, all distances, you know. So.
All right. Hey, thanks.
My pleasure. You forgot my name. Did you say?
I think you said it at the beginning.
Oh, good.
Oh, well, I can edit it in. What's your name?
Rick Kent.
Rick Kent. Here comes Jorge. He missed the record by about 1 minute. 1 minute. Whoa, yeah. Wow. Race directors congratulating him. Missed the course record just barely. Barely. Awesome job.
Record that. 13:16:56. 13:16:56. 13:16:56.
What year was that?
That was like the first or second year I was doing this, Mickey, because if I'm not mistaken, they did it when the people was running it from there.
So I'm here with the course medic again, and what was some of the injuries you saw today?
The blisters, a lot of twisted ankles, a couple of abrasions, which were kind of unusual in the past, especially locations around ankles, like people's feet are rubbing up against their ankles, and broken toes.
I heard one guy had a really bad broken toe. Was that this race or another?
Yeah, there was this race, and it was really nicely broken, and a huge hematoma up underneath the nail bed. So it was one of the prettier ones I've seen so far.
And I actually saw a few people with leaves up on their shoulders, like they tripped and then tumbled like a somersault.
Yeah, the course was pretty flat, but apparently most of the routes were covered from debris and stuff, and people weren't seeing them. So there was a lot more falls this time than I've seen in the past too. So.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm going to interview the real athlete here, Mr. Alex.
Yeah! The Hi. Man who knows how to do it.
Yes.
So, you finished the 50-miler?
Yes, I did, and I set a new personal record.
Yeah, and earlier you were talking about not even doing it. You were joking around, but still.
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
A man of many words.
Yes. All right, man. So how does it feel to set that record?
It feels real good. You know, it feels real good. I didn't know what to expect because I was undertrained and had a lot of aches and pains going into this, but everything worked out good. I felt pretty good.
Did you have a strategy this time around that helped you out?
One foot in front of the other till I got to the finish line, yes.
Did you... You weren't listening to any music or anything like that?
No, not at all. I just was enjoying nature and looking at people.
Yeah, it is a sightseeing race, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Just a screaming going on in his head.
Just all the voices.
Stop! Put it in there that I was almost run over by an ATV.
Hey, we don't know anything about that. Those guys are punks. Driving ATVs around and throwing trash everywhere.
Hooligans.
Yeah, hooligans. Ruining the quiet.
Cigarette and a can of sardines. You'll feel much better.
Have a cigarette and open up your lungs a little bit.
Yeah. But that time that's posted, the record,
that's a world record for trail ultra marathon 100 mile. 13:16:02 is
he almost beat the world record in 100 miler?
This is, yeah.
Wow.
Not road, but trail.
Yeah, yeah.
It's trail.
So the record here is the world record 100 mile time.
Wow. But still.
Yeah.
Very close.
Very, very close. So he's kind of kicking himself right now.
Golly.
You know, maybe he grabbed too many chips somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole bunch of ways you could have made up a minute, you know? I guess. Every time you and I saw him.
It's less than a minute. It's like 45 seconds.
Yeah. But every time you and I saw him, like here at this aid station, he just went flying around me. The cone or whatever.
Right. Yeah. It was just amazing. He had, you know, the pacers were perfect. They were doing all they could to stay up with him. The weather was perfect. The trail was perfect. So he got close, but still kicking himself.
All right, man. All right.
Hey, awesome.
Okay. All right.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. So I'm walking back to the car, and that's a wrap. And I had the best time. Much better than just sitting around and watching an old Super Bowl or something.
And don't forget, you can find out the race results at TejasTrails.com. That's T-E-J-A-S Trails.com. And can't wait to see you next episode. Out.